clock out.
See you tomorrow.
Get out and get in. The Steph Lucas Show is on.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the 5 o'clock hour of the Steph Lucas Show. What is happening this hour? Well, I am scheduled for a call with Idaho's Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan. As you know, she is running for governor, so we are going to ask her how that campaign is going. I believe this is actually Lieutenant Governor McGeehan. Let's check in. Hi, this is KID.
Hi there, Stephanie.
Hello, Lieutenant Governor McGeehan. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, that's great to hear. So I'm pretty great. It's a nice day over here in East Idaho. It's only 78 degrees, so it's kind of a relief. After the heat wave,
a little bit already
that we've had. So we're live on the air right now. Are you ready to go with questions? I mean,
absolutely.
Okay,
yes, absolutely.
All right. So something I've been talking about on my show the last couple days, and I just played a portion of my interview with Mark Fuller. Of course, you know Mark Fuller. He's chairman of the Bonneville County Republicans. Uh-huh. We were talking about this eviction moratorium that the director of the CDC signed to extend putting off evictions. Now, everyone's worried about tenants not being able to pay rent, but I'm really starting to worry about the effects on landlords in Idaho after, 16 months of this. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think the eviction moratorium itself is unconstitutional because mm-hmm. it says in our Constitution that no person shall be deprived of their life, liberty, or property without the due process of law mm-hmm. or without, due process of compensation. And so Congress has made an attempt to get some money to the landlords through different state programs, mm-hmm. state projects. But I can't remember. I read something just the other day where the percentage of the money that's actually going the landlord is very, very small. So I think there's a problem with the way some of the states are administering these programs. Mm-hmm. The money is going directly to the tenant rather than to the landlord. So
right.
if the money goes to the tenant and they end up spending it somewhere else and it never gets to the landlord, that's a problem. And it's significant. Again, I can't quote the percentage, but I do recall understanding that it's a significant percentage of that money that's not getting back to the landlords.
Okay. And so landlords are hurting right now. They've been hurting since the beginning of these eviction moratoriums. And Mark Fuller was telling me he thinks this is going to destroy the housing and the rental market in Idaho. If you were governor, is there a way that you would go about preventing this or taking care of this mandate from the federal government?
Well, it's just like what we saw when Republican governors across the state decided to end the enhanced unemployment benefits. We have a choice mm-hmm. of whether or not we accept all this money. And as soon as we ended the enhanced unemployment benefits, guess what happened? Everyone went back to work. And so that's what we need to do. I mean, every business that I know, whether it's a transmission shop or a restaurant or a hotel, an accounting firm, every business that I know is having a hard time finding employees right now. And
right.
so if we have such a crush with employment, then, why are we continuing these benefits? We need to get people back to work and help get them to be back to paying for their rent or their mortgage. Now, some people think this is a cruel thought, but the reality is that we're not doing our people a favor mm-hmm. if we continue to keep them in situations that they can't. For example, if they're in a situation where they can't make their mortgage payment, then they need to do something about increasing their skills to earn more money. If they're just not being made to pay the mortgage company, that's not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you've got a 12 months worth of unpaid mortgage mm-hmm. payments, then, that's a lot of stress to put onto an individual. That, it's a heavy burden of debt. to have on them. That's not a good place for people to be.
Right.
And if they're in a, if they're renting a home or in a mortgage situation that they're just, you know, the rent is too much or the mortgage payment is too high, there, we don't see that these mortgages are being refinanced to, you know, for a lower rate, or that they're moving into a more affordable place or finding a roommate. None of these things are good in the long term for the individual, because it just continues to keep them in a place that's stressful and increases their debt. And they're, you know, because again, it's not going away. It's just being delayed.
Right. They're just accruing the rental payment.
Yes. Yes. So we're not doing our citizens good by keeping them in these situations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Speaking of taking federal money, let's talk about the Senate inching towards an infrastructure bill approval. We have two senators out of Idaho, Crapo and Risch, that have voted for this. There's a lot of people concerned about the fact that it's, I think, 2,700 pages, $3.5 trillion. And the excuse that I hear from a lot of lawmakers for accepting this is, well, another state was going to get the money anyway, so we should just take it. What do you think about this infrastructure bill? Does Idaho need it? Where do you stand?
Well, I guess that's the one thing Congress knows how to do well, and that is spend money. I was on the news this morning. Secretary Yellen, she's the Federal Reserve Chair right now. She was calling on Congress to increase our debt limit in our country, so that we can have more spending. The spending is a real problem in our nation. And for those people who claim that, well, we're just going to do this to get our fair share, you know, so that it doesn't go to other states, that's just false.
Okay.
That's a false narrative. It's taking us further into debt, which is what's going to harm our kids and the younger generations to have to pay that back at some point.
Right. Do you think I thought we were pausing there. Go ahead. Finish up.
Well, I'm not sure I fully answered your question about what about the package. Again, it's full of, you know, and the percentage of money, again, that actually going to infrastructure is low. 30% of the money going to actual transportation projects.
Right.
It's such a small part of that bill. And there are some legitimate things that we could be spending money on, like we need to increase our ports across the country, because the lack of supplies for building materials, lack of materials and workers of getting things distributed is leading, also playing into our housing shortage and the supply shortage that every business is experiencing. So we need to have, you know, perhaps increase our port, grow them, you know, to match these big ships that are coming in until we can start manufacturing more things here in our country. So a lot of that bill is just things like, again, interfering in things that the federal government shouldn't be a part of. They shouldn't be involved in, like, you know, setting up the infrastructure for electric vehicles and green energy deals. That's up to the private sector to do that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I've got here the deal includes $50 billion to help communities ward off cyber attacks and the effects of climate change. That sounds very vague to me, so I'm not quite sure what they mean by that. But you do think that some infrastructure is needed, but not to this massive amount that the Senate's approving?
No, absolutely not to that massive amount. I do think infrastructure improvements are an important role of government. But again, you know, what their package is, it's just such a small percentage of what their proposed spending is. It's just ridiculous.
Right. Republicans and Democrats certainly have a really different picture of what infrastructure is, for sure. All right. So you had a meeting recently with the Indoctrination Task Force. How do you think that went?
Well, we sure learned a lot. We had three meetings so far, and then August will be our final meeting, where it will mostly be public testimony. We've, you know, had a lot of people that wanted to come speak to the committee, and so our last meeting in August will be primarily listening to the concerns of the people. That will be on Thursday, August 26th, from 1 till 5. So if anybody's interested, I ask to have them call the Lieutenant Governor's office or send us an email. We'll put you on the list to testify so we can listen to the concerns. But we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot about just what is critical race theory, what is diversity, equity, inclusion, what are some of the rules and the statutes in Idaho, the mechanisms that are allowing this to be, you know, to creep into our curriculum. And it is, you know, I'm actually just looking at some information that someone sent to me from the Nampa School District about what their program teaching with they used to refer to it solely as critical race theory. And then we tried to define what that was. And then they decided to change the name of this to diversity, equity, inclusion.
Yeah, the goalpost keeps moving. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It keeps moving. But it's all the same thing. And the concept behind this is to teach our kids a different form of government than what this nation is based on. And that as individuals, the nation is based on rule of law, that doesn't matter how tall you are or skinny you are or what color your skin is. Everyone has equal opportunity under the law. When you insert the idea of equity, then what that means is more resources are going to be pumped into the person that somebody comes along and determines is more disadvantaged than the other. And then the others be not given anything. So it's the same thing, and we've learned a lot about where it's coming into our schools.
Okay. Pertaining to public testimony, recently Idaho Ed News, you got really pressured to turn in names and email addresses of people who had written to you, whether they were for or against this. And you called it on Facebook. You said, why does the media want this information? Idaho Ed News went ahead and published some of the names and commentary of people for and against the Indoctrination Task Force. I know it was all under Freedom of Information Act. But my thinking is that, and I asked an attorney, Larry Claymore, actually, that founded Judicial Watch, and I related the situation to him. And he said, I said, why would the media publish these names? And he said, my guess is they want to scare people away from standing up to critical race theory. That was his guess with Judicial Watch. Do you think this is going to affect the amount of people coming forward for public testimony?
I don't know. I don't think so. What they published, those emails that were that we gave through public records request were not the same set of feedback that we were soliciting through our website. We had set up a website that we encouraged people to, you know, reach to us about specific examples that were happening in their community, their schools. That those emails are still, they're actually in the hands of the judges now, because I told the Idaho Press, the reporters, I said, look, you can have the information and the comments, but you're not going to see where the comments came, because some of these comments actually listed out children's names, schools, teachers, and those were the things that we were fighting to protect. So those have not been released. They're in the hands of the judge. I'm scheduled to appear on a Zoom meeting Friday to try to resolve this. But if some judge determines that private information should be released, it will be from a judge and not from the Lieutenant Governor of Idaho, because I do feel that it's important. If my constituents across the state are going to send information to me, that I should protect their identification. And so the emails that this other article was reporting on were more generic towards the task force itself, not so much specifically reporting about K-12 cases that are happening in their schools or their communities.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that. I really appreciate that. So you've got your final meeting coming up. Will the task force make any recommendations or a report when after the last meeting?
We absolutely will. The very least thing that we need to do is offer up a definition for critical race theory to the legislature, because it's in our statute now, but it's not defined. And so at the very least, we will do that. But there are other things that came up where we learned a lot about some of the standards that are written to the administrative rules dealing with teaching civics and U.S. government. So we could make some recommendations, you know, that maybe we make sure to focus on teachings like the teaching of our constitutional republic form of government, rather than these
It's Monday. I get it.
There's just a difference. It's a different teaching about democracy is different than teaching about a constitutional republic.
Right.
But we've seen a lot of that in the textbooks. So, you know, and perhaps an emphasis making sure that the constitutional republic teachings are more important than the others, more of a priority.
Okay. So more of a civics education. I don't think there's enough. This is just me spouting off my opinion, but I don't think there's enough civics education in schools at all. So.
But there's things that we've learned, like our code does provide a way for parents to get more involved and help form these committees on reviewing the curriculum that goes through these school districts. And so, you know, we could shore up some of those provisions and just make sure that we have more chance for parents to weigh in on this very important issue that some in our state continue to deny.
Yeah.
And then another, there is a Biden administration proposed rule that would give grant taxpayer dollars to classrooms if they teach the 1619 project.
Yes, I've read about that.
All form of teaching. Yeah. So those are things that perhaps we could say, no, that's not going to happen in our schools in Idaho.
Right. Okay. Well, this is all really important information. Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor. I appreciate you spending much time with us today.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thanks.
Always good to talk with you.
It's always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for the update on everything. Have a terrific evening.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thanks.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan giving us an update on the indoctrination task force. We also talked about the issues with Idaho landlords and how this eviction moratorium, Janice there saying it is unconstitutional. And we're talking a little bit about how it affected landlords. More on the way. We're talking about Bigfoot coming up on the Steph Lucas Show.